You're listening to a message from Hope Central in Adelaide, South Australia. If you'd like to know more about Hope Central or any of our ministries, please visit hopecentral.org.au.
The corners of my mind, misty watercolored memories of the way we were. Scattered pictures of them styles we left behind, scenes we gave to one another of the way we were. Of the way we were.
Memories. I want to ask you a question. If you lost your memory, how would you know that you lost it? Is there any way that you can tell that you lost your memory? I mean, if people, someone came up to you and said, hey, remember this? And you say, no, I don't remember that. And then they totally tried to convince you, but you're like, I don't even know who you are. If you lost your memory, how would you even know that you lost it? It's like a part of you is missing, but you don't even know that it's gone. It's a theme that people like to play out in movies. You know, I think one of my wife's favorite movies is The Notebook, where the whole story of the movie is about this couple that are enduring the pain of one of them having dementia. And she's lost her memory of her husband. And that's the most disappointing thing to them. So the story of the movie is just them hearing the story of their lives in a way that he tells it so that she'll ultimately remember. But there's other movies too, like The Vow, you know, where there's this couple and they're so totally in love, but because of an accident, she loses her memory. And then the husband tries to win her back, but she has absolutely no idea who he is. And because he's so different from her current, the memories that she still holds, she kind of pushes him away. And nothing that he does can get through to her. Or maybe you're more of an action man and you want to think about like the Bourne trilogies, you know, or quadruples, whatever they are now. There's so many of them. Yeah. Whereas, you know, this assassin agent has lost his memory and he doesn't even know who he is, but a lot of other people do. Or maybe you're more of a sci-fi Total Recall type where somebody loses their memory and then it's reignited in this sort of adventure machine. And then was it really his memory or just programming that was given to him? You know, it's a very interesting idea because it plays with something that's just on the edge of almost a secret terror. That is that we lose our memories. You know, and it even gets into children's movies. If you can remember Finding Nemo, one of the very favorite characters was Dory, a goldfish or some kind of fish that can't remember anything. And the loss of that character's memory is a key part of the situations that happen in the story. I wonder if you've lost your memory. There's this verse in in the Psalm 77, verse 11. He says this, "I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old." I've looked through the Psalms several times now. And the last few times I've been reading through the Psalms, I've been searching with this idea that the Psalms are a kind of spiritual warfare and spiritual disciplines rolled into one. That the things that the psalmist sings about, writes about, cries about, complains to God about, are the very realities of a life that people live trying to live in a relationship with God and stumbling and being trapped and falling apart and not being able to endure the difficulties that are there. And the psalmist in this psalm is saying, there's something wrong with my memory. There's something wrong, and I can't remember God. So he goes purposely, says, I'm going to remember. I want to ask you this. Do you think maybe you've lost your memory?
When I first got to know Jody, my wife, one of the things that we got to do was to visit our grandfather, who was in an aged care facility, and Grandpa Mappy. The family would just come in and, you know, get all excited and see. And, you know, he'd have dementia by the time I got to meet him for probably 5 years. So I guess the whole family was used to that, like in the sense that it wasn't a new experience for them. But there's still something a bit like sad, like very difficult, something you really do never get used to. That when I'd see the family, it would grab him, hug him, talk to him, and then there'd be no spark of recognition in return in his eyes. I thought that's a really sad thing for everyone, that he didn't remember them. And that memory is really the only thing that locked that family together as one. It was the only thing that made sense of all the love. It was the only thing that made that greeting something more than just strangers passing in a hallway. I can't imagine what that would be like for one of us to lose our memory of our love for each other, of our lives together. It's a real pain. And for relationships, it's a real problem. And so when the psalmist says, "I will remember, I will remember, I will remember," he's not just talking about some sort of, study for an exam pressure to try to make sure he's got the answers. He's not talking about not forgetting to pick up the milk. He's not talking about, you know, insignificant details. He's saying, "I've forgotten God. I've forgotten what he's like. He used to hug me. He used to be my friend, and I can't remember him." And I think that maybe the loss of our spiritual memory, the loss of our relationship with God, the memory of us and him, is perhaps one of the most devastating things to our relationship, to our faith, is to forget.
Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening. Great to have you joining us with us today as we just continue to look into this idea of spiritual amnesia. That is, you know, I open with this question in my piano playing segment, which was, if you'd lost your memory, how would you know that you had? And then a broader than that is, what implications does that have on your life? Surely you could see immediately that if you didn't remember the people that were around you, it would really disastrously affect those relationships. For one, they would feel like they know you, but you wouldn't feel like you knew them. And that would cause a great amount of trust issues. It would cause all kinds of problems in your relationship, so much so that maybe they wouldn't continue. What I really was getting at, though, is what if we can get like that with God? I mean, he knows us. It's not like he could ever lose his memory. He knows he knows the time before we were born. He knows our entire lives. He knows every detail about it. And he's not going to forget any of that. The problem is that this sort of awkwardness that sometimes we get with God is because we've forgotten him. And so spiritual amnesia is a real problem for our spiritual lives. And I want to suggest that perhaps it's an area of satanic attack and problems that happens to all of us. Let's look into it in this way. In Psalm 77, that psalm that I was quoting from, he starts out the psalm with an expression of his spiritual crisis. He says this, "I cry aloud to God," aloud to God. You can't feel any more of the potency of that pain. And he will say, "And he will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints." Now that line there really shows kind of that he's both reaching out to God, but then at the same time, he feels like it's the problem is with his relationship with God, that he's not okay. He's not in a right place with God, and it's causing this huge spiritual crisis. Maybe you feel the same. There are times when we just feel very distant from God or very confused. Or let me just say this. In the times of your life when your faith has been the most detrimentally affected, has it not also produced in you a real doubt or insecurity about God's power, his availability, his love towards you? You see, this man is saying the very same thing. In fact, he says, "When I remember God, I moan." Like, oh, that's actually the Hebrew word. It's more of a sound. He says, "When I meditate, my spirit faints." Or in Hebrew, it gets cloaked as though something is stopping me from being alive. So what if we forget what God is really like? You know, in the New Testament, we see the story of Jesus in the four Gospels, and we see Jesus, who is God in the flesh, God's Son in the relationship of the Trinity. But this is God speaking to people as he relates to them, and everything that he's got to say is both a depth of truth about God, but he's also displaying it in the things that he does. And so we have this miracle match where Jesus is supernaturally demonstrating that he is speaking for God. And then he says things, but people don't accept what he says. Now, the people that were kind of in charge religiously in the community that Jesus was talking to were people from political religious parties known as the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the teachers of the law. These are because when you get religiously powerful in a community that has real strong religious beliefs, it creates a political power. It creates an opportunity to control what people are allowed to say and what they're going to do. So Jesus is always up against this conflict with these Pharisees, scribes, teachers of the law, Sadducees. And so he has lots of conversations with them. In one, Jesus is talking about truth. And he wants to tell people, if you knew the truth about God, the truth about you, the truth about life, the truth about sin, if you knew the truth, then you would be free. And Jesus has the power to both give us that truth, get us into truth, so that we can walk in the freedom of becoming children of God. But as he's talking to them about truth, he ends up having this conversation with them. And he says in John chapter 8, 31 to 33, "So Jesus said to the Jews who believed in him, 'If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" So just stop a sec and remember, knowing the truth is absolutely vital to being a disciple of Jesus. But it goes both ways. You first have to become a disciple before you're going to know the truth, because it's only when we submit to Jesus that we actually get his help and his understanding. If we're in rebellion, like, "Prove it to me and then I'll do it," you say, it's not very likely that he's going to lead us anywhere. So Jesus says, "Come to me and let me be the guiding power. If you accept my words and they abide in you, then you're going to know the truth, and the truth will unlock you and life, and you will see God in reality." And then he has the response from the people. They answered him, "We are the offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you can say we will become free? Now, for years, I read this verse and just kind of skimmed past that. And then one moment I was reading it and I thought, we're the offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. I'm thinking, I've read the Bible a lot of times. I'm pretty sure that there was 400 years where the Jews, the Jewish people, the offspring of Abraham, were slaves. They were slaves. In fact, that's what it says again and again and again and again. We're slaves. And then I'm thinking, are these guys just like being argumentative with Jesus? Blah, blah, blah. We've never been. Well, you can't say we need to be free. We've never been slaves to anyone. Are they just being sort of contrarian, or are they actually saying, no, we've never been slaves? Like, give yourself a reality check, guys. Your book says you were slaves. Read the book. But is this actually the problem? They have lost the memory. They have lost touch with the reality that they used to be slaves. And so now their perspective on life is, oh, we've always been in control of our own destinies. We've always been in control. No, you forgot that you only have any kind of freedom because God set you free. You were slaves. But here's the problem. They forgot. They forgot it. And because they forgot that God had given them freedom, it changes their perspective on everything in life. And now God is there again talking to them, and they're no longer willing to accept that they need a miracle. So, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible about how if we misremember our lives, we make bad choices. Take, for example, in Numbers chapter 11. So the people of Israel, who were slaves, but now forgotten somehow, they're coming out of their slavery, and they've been released from Egypt, but now they're in a wilderness time. And in Numbers chapter 11, the people start to complain. The rabble, they're called. It says, the rabble that was among them had a strong craving. And the people of Israel wept again and said, oh, that we had meat to eat. Remember the fish. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost us nothing. Oh, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Oh, the garlic. But now our strength is dried up and there's nothing at all in this manna to look at. They've got supernatural best tasting bread from heaven ever. And they're whinging about that. And then they say, we remember how good it used to be. Now, if you just rewind a couple of books in the Bible, the people in Israel are crying out because they're not okay, because they don't have fish to eat, cucumbers, they don't have freedom, their children are being murdered, they are whipped, they are crying out because of their oppression. But somehow, they've forgotten all of that. And when they forgot that, they started to complain to God. Gee, your memory's powerful. And losing your memory, if you forget how bad your life was before you had God in it, you will make a series of bad choices and complaints to God. Maybe you've forgotten. So, I wanted to ask this question because I'm suspicious. Who's been messing with your mind? In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11, it says, Paul is talking to the Corinthian church mostly about grace and forgiveness. But here he says, so that we would not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. Now, I don't think he has just one scheme or one plan or one plot. He's got lots of ways of ruining us, lots of ways of tricking us. And I want to suggest to you this, that maybe the spiritual world around you is not just giving you problems, hassling you, trying to give you doubt and fear, but maybe the demonic world is actually stripping you of your memory of God, making you forget. It's one time. I was talking to a man. He was in a real spiritual crisis, much like Psalm 77, just struggling, and didn't understand why. And this person was normally very optimistic and a positive person, but it was just in a real despair. And so as we were talking, I remembered hearing the story and remembering hearing Psalm 77, then remembering something that another preacher said that I heard, that how Satan might mess with your memory. And so I said to him this, I said, just stop. Do you mind if I just ask you a question? I said, do you remember a miracle? I said, first of all, have you seen or experienced or been around miracles? He said, yeah, definitely have. And all the years he'd been in church and seen people in prayer lines and all the things that he'd seen miracles. I said, okay, so you remember that you were there and there were miracles. Can you remember one of those miracles? And his face fell. And you know when people knit their eyes together like that as they really dig deep, like I'm trying to remember. I don't know why we need to screw our faces up to remember things, but apparently winding our eyes and our noses together and pulls memories out of our brains. So he was really going. And he said, you know what? This is scary, but I can't actually remember any of those miracles. I said, I think you've got a spiritual problem. So we spent a bit of time talking and then praying. And in my prayer, I was praying that he would be, that the demonic power to strip him of his memories would be broken and he would remember one of those miracles. After the prayer, I said, do you remember one of the miracles? And he said, yeah, I do. And then I said, tell it to me. So he told me the miracle. I said, great. Now that you've told the one, can you remember another? And then suddenly it was like a flood. It all came flooding back to him like memories tend to do. You see, Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15, the guidelines for being the people of God. You know there's lots of commands. There's lots of things about the law that we recognize as showing us that we are limited in the flesh. Human beings cannot please God in the flesh, so we need God's help. The law is what shows us that. But there's lots of things in the law that are also guiding us in our relationship with God. To tell us to love the Lord our God is not just to command us something that we can't do and we need God to give us love in our hearts for him, but to remember then in our lives, after we have God's help, that we still have to follow that loving God principle. And so in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15, I don't know if this will surprise you, but there's a command to remember. He says, you shall remember that you were a slave. Now, that's exactly the problem that the Jews had before Jesus in John chapter 8. They forgot, but they were commanded to remember a slave. You shall remember you are a slave. Now, you know, people say, oh, I don't want to bring up the past stuff. I don't want to talk about bad news and I want to say negative things. God is purposely trying to tell us you need to remember how bad it was. You were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So he's saying you have this rest day because you were a slave and you never got a rest. And so God is commanding us today, right now, to remember that we were slaves. Without him, we are always slaves, trapped and broken. And if we forget that even for a moment, it will divert us from the destiny that God has for us. Remember, you know, in Deuteronomy chapter 7, he talks about the power of memory by talking about how if we keep the memories, it will keep our faith strong. Deuteronomy 7, 17 to 19, if you say in your heart, these nations are greater than I. How can I dispossess them? They're going in the promised land and they're wondering, wow, how can we beat armies that are both physically stronger, better equipped, and have more numerous? What are we going to do with that? Well, so you're going to get depressed and you're going to start to wonder whether or not you can achieve anything. So he says, you shall not be afraid of them, but you shall remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt, the great trials that your eyes saw, the signs, the wonders, the mighty hand, the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So will the Lord your God do all to the peoples to whom you are afraid. You see, if you forget what God has done in your past, you will have nothing to draw on for faith for this current moment, because you're going to get challenges. But if you forget that God is the one who crushes those challenges, God is the one who provides in the famines, God is the one who preserves you and helps you. If you forget your testimony, then you're going to be left hanging at the next crisis and the next hurdle. My friends, maybe that's your problem right now. You're facing a crisis and you don't have enough faith. And the only thing stopping you from having that faith is you forgot what God did. So, Deuteronomy chapter 8, also says you need to keep remembering that it's God who preserves us and blesses us. He says, beware lest any of you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. God has made a covenant to provide for us. He is going to be the provider. We need to remember that. And let me tell you this, your actions are oftentimes a picture of what you remember. Like James says, that you can tell your faith by what you do. You also can instruct your faith by your actions and mature your faith by your actions. There's nothing like taking God at his word and doing it to build your faith, because it'll both challenge it and grow it as you live out the word of God. And Jesus says you need to do this with your money. God is saying this, you should never, ever spend all your money on yourself. If you do that, it's like telling yourself, all this is mine, I can do whatever I want with it. That's not true at all. Everything that you have has been given to you by God. You should act like God gave it to you. And if you act like God gave it to you by tithing and generously giving, then you will also remind your faith that God is the provider that you need. Maybe your actions are letting down your faith, but it all stems from this. You're forgetting God's your provider. So Judges is a strong picture, because Judges is the books that follow sort of, we got Moses, we got Joshua, we got the people that remembered that, and that generation, when they pass away, the judges are the emerging of that new generation of people that strangely do not follow devoted to God. They have good and bad seasons. And every time they do go through a bad season, they cry out to God. And what does he do? Well, he rescues them. It's his nature. Remember that. But in the book of Judges, there's this sad thing that happens as Gideon, one of the judges, dies. It says, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baals, and the Baal Berith, their god. And the people of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hand of all their enemies on every side. My friends, it is a slippery slope. And this is what I think. Satan would love you to forget God. He would love you to forget what he's done for you. He would love to just cloud it over and just think, oh, I don't know. Did God ever help me, love me, provide for me? Satan is going after your memory. You and I, we have to remember. In Mark chapter 8, Jesus is talking to the disciples, and they've got this problem because they constantly, chronically think that they're not getting things right. And Jesus wants to remind them, don't worry, I provide for you. So when he feeds them, the miracle, the feeding of the 4,000, they don't get the message. It's like they've got some sort of spiritual problem. Well, Mark chapter 8, he says that they do. He says, having eyes, don't you see? Having ears, don't you hear? And then he says this, do you not remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 12. And then the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 7. And he said, don't you get it? If you had been there and saw a miracle where 5,000 people were fed with 5 loaves of fish, or you had a miracle where 4,000 people were fed with 7 loaves of fish, I'll bet you say to yourself, that's something I'll never forget. Well, I just want to give you a dose of reality. The people who saw that forgot it. Maybe you're forgetting something too. I want to fill you with this idea. Maybe you've forgotten something. Maybe you have. And you better scrunch up your spiritual face and remember. So, remembering is a pathway to revival. In Revelation chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, talking to the Ephesian church, he says, I have this against you. You've abandoned the love that you have at first. They started with this passion for God, high-peaking, wow, God, we will suffer for you, serve you, love you, because you're just the best. And we're doing this out of love. But he says this, remember therefore from where you have fallen. Repent and do the works you did at first. If not, I'll come to you and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent. His command is remember. His command is not try harder. His command is, remember, 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 remember that love that you had at first. Get that going in your spirit and you'll see. You see, Psalm 76, the resolution in the Psalms, the decisions that he makes in the Psalms that resolve his spiritual crisis are all about remembering. He says, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate it in my heart. Then my spirit did a diligent search. You see, your spirit is working with the things that is in your memory, that's in your conscience, that's in your testimony. Your spirit is looking for food to nourish it so it can grow, so it can be revived, so it can worship again. And so he says, give me that song back. And he digs in and he struggles, and his fight is to secure the memory of God. And so he says in verses 10 and 11, then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. So he thinks, I'm getting back in the book. I'm reading it. I'm going to read about the slavery. I'm going to read about the deliverance. I'm going to read. I'm going to read. I'm going to read. And I'm going to find this out. I'm going to talk to the oldies. I'm going to find all the testimonies. I'm going to get a hold of the prophets. I'm going to remember. My friends, we need to do work to get our memories going again. You know, in that movie, The Notebook, he uses the story of their lives to rekindle the memory. You need to get the story of what God's done for you and remember how good he has been. I want you to try to remember this. Here's a list. What miracles has God done for you, for your family? What forgiveness has he brought you? What score of things and offenses that you've done against him has he generously and easily forgiven? What love has he provided for you, and opportunities for love in his family, in his church, in his relationships? What love have you been given that you've forgotten? What joy have you experienced in the past? What celebrations have there been there? What wonderful things have happened to you that lit you up and you were so grateful? What help has God provided? What is the way that he has been there providentially ahead of you in time so that you've got something there when you get there? But also, what help has he provided through the course of your life, day after day, through not just him miraculously helping, but also the people around you, the strength that they gave you, the advice that they gave you, the people that God invested around you to make sure you had what you need? What help has God provided? Have you experienced, seen, or heard of any of those things? Can I just encourage you, get those memories out, rehearse them, recount them. There is this song that we used to sing when I was a new Christian, and it was based on an old hymn. It was called Count Your Blessings. You know, these are not the words for it, but the song went, count your blessings, count them one by one, and you will remember what the Lord has done. You see, we've got to dig those memories out, and we've got to put them in front of our hearts, and we've got to say, God, you are amazing. It'll inspire your faith. You'll be able to tell the demonic, get out of my life. You are trying to trick me. So my friends, what have you forgotten? And if you have forgotten, and I guarantee you have, you need to start. You need to go back, follow that breadcrumb trail, and just find that story of faith and of miracle and of love and of joy and of peace and of help that God has provided you, and tell that story to somebody. Because that will inspire the next story and the next and the next and the next. And pretty soon you're speaking out your testimony of the power of God. My friends, we're trying to help you, trying to grow you, trying to keep you on track with God. You've got a spiritual amnesia problem. Let's fix it. Go to God for help. He will help you remember. God bless you. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a message from Hope Central in Adelaide, South Australia. If you want more information about who we are, visit us at hopecentral.org.au or join us for Sunday worship at any of our three campuses.